From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on April 7th, 2015 in Rochester, when two men launched a new effort to help the homeless population here. It's called Person-Centered Housing Options Incorporated. Nick Coulter and Chuck Albanese have a combined, well, at least at the time they did, 25 years of experience in working with people who are homeless. And they felt that this was the model, person-centered housing. What does that mean? Well, they believe it's one that could not only bring someone off the streets temporarily, but an approach that might keep families together or help someone who's living with mental illness or assist someone in finding a job, strengthening a neighborhood, and finding permanent solutions. So does it work? We're going to explore it this hour. In the past 3 months alone, person-centered housing options have helped house 60 individuals and families right here in Rochester, and it's the time of year when our listeners have asked us to tell the stories of people helping others in our community, especially in the homeless population. It's in that spirit that we welcome our guest for the hour, Nick Coulter, co-founder of PCHO, Person-Centered Housing Options, Inc. Nick, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Great to have you. Chuck Albanese, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
And Enrique Arcelay is here, and Enrique is someone who's been served by person-centered housing. Enrique, welcome to you as well.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Nick, you guys had worked together, well, I'd say you'd worked separately, 25 years or so combined, going back a few years ago when you decided to put this together. How did you get to know each other in the first place, you and Chuck?
Well, that's a really good story. Chuck and I, locked eyes at several meetings after contentious things come up and difficult initiatives get started. And Chuck and I felt like, you know what, we have some pretty similar interests. We have like-minded approaches to people and families that we serve. And we both came from different points of view. I was really focused on housing and outreach and street case management. And Chuck came from the healthcare system. And so we started just getting lunch together and talking about the cycles that our folks go through. And eventually we said we needed to do something about it. We needed to change our community.
And you started in this big grand headquarters.
Yeah.
Which was what?
Our barn. Yeah. So Chuck owns a house, and we said, you know what, we've got some space in the barn. Let's paint it and get it ready and clean it up and take it from being a man cave to an office space that's professional. And after about 3 or 4 months, it got pretty cold. We were stoking the fire and couldn't type on our laptops and do notes. So we finally got a space over on Monroe Avenue and are now at 1136 Buffalo Road.
Okay, so, what's that space like?
It's much different. You want to talk about that?
Much more spacious. The heat's more consistent. But thanks to Providence Housing, they rent a space on 1136 Buffalo Road, and it's pretty much like any other office, but we have offices for each of our staff, which is an added plus.
And yeah. For you, Chuck, why don't you give me your perspective? I mean, Nick's kind of describing how you ended up working together on this. What's your perspective on how this all came out?
Sure. As Nick stated, I worked in healthcare for 20 years, and the last 5 years of my time, I oversaw the Healthcare for the Homeless program at Unity Health System. And as Nick said, we were at different meetings together, and you know, some of the same issues kept cycling over and over again, and with no resolution, really. And from a healthcare perspective, we were getting patients that were sicker and sicker that were homeless. And a great example of is a person that was a male was 35 years old on chemo and radiation, and couldn't be placed in a normal shelter because of that. So, you know, that posed some challenges, but with my relationship with Nick and the county, actually, we were able to temporarily house this individual and provide health care for them. But the real issue that I think brought us together was the issue of chronically homeless in our community and the steady number that we've experienced, and really no resolution with the current system that we have or programs. And really that led into us discussing, well, what are possible solutions? And Housing First, you know, kept on coming up, and, you know, the funding sources that were available, you know, him and I continued to talk about, and really that kind of evolved into what you see now.
Okay, so I want to do a couple of things. We're going to hear Enrique's story, which I think is probably emblematic of the kind of work that they've been doing. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, a couple of things here. In a moment, we're going to define in detail what person-centered housing means. Mm-hmm. Before we even do that, before the program began, somebody asked me, well, what is the homeless population in Rochester? And I said, well, I think that they will probably tell you is that it depends on what you mean by that. Because in some metrics, I mean, the city of Rochester has 2,000 plus technically homeless children in the district, that could mean living from house to house or couch to couch with family, sometimes in a car, sometimes elsewhere. But chronically homeless that Chuck just brought up is probably also a different kind of a population. So what are the different levels of population, and how do you answer the question what the actual number looks like in Rochester, Nick?
Well, that's a very challenging question, and I think as much as our programs and the continuum of care and the Department of Human Services and many other entities try to nail down what the number is for chronic homeless, it's very challenging to come up with. But we know that we've found in the point in time, which is last January, we found, I think, about 65 individuals outdoors. That's in January. So we have to imagine that number changes over the period of the year. That 65 is not are of folks that we've found. So if we haven't found them, we know that they exist still. We find them in our suburban areas, staying in Walmart parking lots, staying in parks and rec areas that parked for a little bit. They have different cars and different ways of managing. We found a young woman out in the woods in Webster. We find them all over the place. So chronic homelessness is a very challenging number to get to. We estimate with person-centered housing options from our outreach and from the point in time that we're talking about roughly about 300 to 500 individuals on any given year that would be chronically homeless. That means that they've been homeless for a year or more, or have had multiple episodes of homelessness in the last 3 years. So chronic homelessness can span over time and can really be a detriment to our community's resources and to people's lives. There's a lot of trauma when people are outside for long periods of time. We know from housing placements that, roughly speaking, social services places about 7,500 placements to about 8,000 placements a year. But you're not talking about House of Mercy. You're not talking about St. Joe's House of Hospitality. Those places aren't getting placed through the county. So those numbers increase the chronic homeless number and increase the homelessness overall. So I think it's very challenging, but you can expect that we're talking about 10,000 annually. Wow. Across our continuum.
With several hundred chronically homeless.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are big numbers. And there are different approaches. There are different organizations and institutions in our community that will take sometimes tougher love approaches, sometimes a lot more leeway. This is not to malign or disparage anybody's effort, because everybody wants what's best for people who happen to be homeless. But Chuck, when you said you're working in the healthcare sector and you're seeing this problem, it doesn't sound to me like what you saw was either working or that the problem is getting better. Is that fair?
That's fair. When we talk about chronically homeless, usually there's a trauma that has occurred in the person's life, for whatever reason, and there's issues going on that this person can't maneuver through the systems that we have set up in our community, and they cycle through the system and basically get nowhere. Really, we kind of took a different approach and said that, okay, this isn't working for those individuals. What is a way to do that? And it's not to enable the person. It's really to empower them in a different way. Certainly not a punitive approach, but, if the person has behaviors that impact their housing once they're housed, then those behaviors have to be addressed. But it's really taking a step back, seeing them as a person. Their strength, we use strength-based perspective all the time and really build upon those, which is not always easy, and it can be very challenging. So it's, just an added layer, but we think it's worth it, and we really are dedicated to doing it. So.
Okay, and the definition, when you bump into people on the street, Nick, and they say, hey, what are you doing these days? Well, I'm running person-centered housing. And they say, hey, what's that? What's the elevator pitch?
What's the elevator pitch? I think one of the things that we do is we provide intensive homeless outreach. Our outreach team is the front line. They are out there every day trying to find individuals, connect with them, and engage them in a person-centered practice. That means that they are identifying what the person's needs are, accessing them for a plan, making sure that they're in the passenger seat of the car and the client is driving it. And we're just showing them where the road is. So we're really allowing the person to drive the bus in this place and giving them some pointers along the way. From outreach, then we go into permanent housing. People deserve an apartment. It's their human right. Healthcare is their human right. And so we try to access both things simultaneously, immediately, as much as possible. There are always going to be road bumps, but we try to get people in housing as soon as possible. From permanent supportive housing, which is a case manager with an apartment, to rapid rehousing, which is light case management and some assistance with housing, to ongoing healthcare and care management services, we try to run the gamut so that no person that walks in our door can go away without some sort of service.
And when it comes to any criticism that's out there, it usually sounds something like, well, isn't that backwards? How can someone who is struggling with chronic homelessness or homelessness really of any kind, which is sometimes tied to drugs, mental health,
sure,
trauma of some kind, housing can be a challenge for someone. Shouldn't you work on the root of that? Maybe work on sheltering them for a little while, but work on kind of rooting out what might have caused that in the first place, and do you have it backwards?
Yeah, you want to jump in?
My elevator speech, I start with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And if you look at that pyramid, the basic foundation that outlines the needs are food, shelter, water are the basic ones. And really, if you don't have those basic needs, it can be very difficult to build on anything else. So some people obviously may be opposed to that view, but really for us, if they can't, have a place to stay or food to eat, it's very hard to work on a mental illness. It's very hard to maybe, go see a doctor because they're just worried about where they're going to stay or, to get through the day and find food. So really for me, I start there, but I'll let you take it from here, Nick.
Yeah, I think that's right on. I think, see, Chuck and I kind of go back and forth. We're working tandem here. But I think that with housing first, we have to recognize the potential of the person. We don't know that they're capable of changing their lives if we don't give them that opportunity. They may fail. They may end up flooding their apartment. They may end up not paying their rent. They may end up using drugs. But I think that happens when housed people are in housing, just as much as it happens with homeless people trying to get into housing. So I think if we give them the opportunity first and we allow them for opportunity to access services, they have a much better chance of being successful.
Okay. And I want to come back to this because some of the other questions people have is, well, is it affordable? Is this, sort of fundably feasible?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I know that Chuck and Nick can address that, but let's talk to Enrique Arcele, who is someone who has been served by person-centered housing. If you're just joining us, we're talking about this approach that is housing is a human right, fair to say, Nick?
Yeah, for sure.
At the core of person-centered housing in our community, and this organization founded just over 2 years ago. So, Enrique, why don't we go back and tell me how you came into view with them?
Yeah, me personally, I was chronically homeless for years, I slept everywhere you could think of, police garage, under the tunnel. Anywhere, actually. And I used to see Nick a lot, going, handling socks, handling health care packages and, food. And at the time, I was really involved in drugs. And it was hard for me to just come talk to him. He used to come talk to me all the time. I would just take the sandwich, whatever, or the socks and keep moving, and never had an opportunity. He was always very patient, he always...
What did you think about him?
When I got tired, it gets to a point when you're tired of being tired, you know. And I finally thought to myself, you know, I should give this a try, you know. I need to stop doing what I'm doing because it's my life, you know. And finally one day Nick came by and I talked to him, and it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, you know. And you know,
yeah, not so hard.
He actually has done a lot for me, you know. He helped me a lot. He helped me get in a place. He helped me get a place. He helped me get back into a drug program, and got me to the VA. And he's done a lot, man. It works, you know.
So, Enrique, let me ask you a few questions, and I want to tell you anything you don't want to talk about, just tell me. It's fine. Because I don't want to pry too much, but I also think that it's wonderful sitting here looking at this beautiful success story here as we talk about this. So what would you say led to your chronic homelessness? What caused that?
Well, first was a few traumatic experiences, you know, and sometimes that got a lot to do with it. The fact that sometimes you can't find a job, the fact that sometimes you can't get the help that you need, you know, and that those are a lot of points that led me to being homeless, you know. Not me personally, I have no family here, so, you know, I was all on my own, and it's various points, you know.
Okay, and where did you grow up?
Me, I grew up in New York City, mm-hmm. Puerto Rico, you know, and here.
And here, and
yeah,
and
I went
so
to high school here.
So you're not able to find work. You don't have family around you.
Right.
And you got into drugs. What kind of drugs do you get into?
Cocaine, marijuana, pills, alcohol. You know, that's, it got worse once I was homeless. It got a lot worse.
Is there a moment, you said there was a moment where you kind of got tired of being tired, but
right.
How long did that take? How long were you chronically homeless?
It took me about 4 years, three,
4 years.
4 years.
And so on a day like today, on a night like last night,
right.
You know, it's the wind chill is around zero or less.
Yeah.
Where were you in those days?
The tunnel on the Dinosaur, the Civic Center, wherever.
Okay.
Walking around.
Yeah.
The bus stops, hitting that button every 20 seconds so the heat could come up.
And I want to ask you, if you don't mind, just a couple of questions that are not even related to person-centered housing, but I do think is valuable for us to hear as people who care about all of the people in our community. Did you feel like the average person on the street of Rochester saw you and cared about you?
No, not really. You know? And, you know, My thing was, you don't have to look, you know, you could be homeless, you don't have to look homeless, you know. I mean, I try not to, you know, I always try to be presentable, but there's a lot of people who have let go because of years of being chronic, and sometimes you see how regular people in the street treat those kind of people, and it's not fair, you know. It's not fair.
What do you think is the best approach for any of us who are not homeless, when they bump into people like you who are in your situation?
Sometimes being nice to someone, like, you know, like me being homeless on the street, being nice and, you know, have a word of care, you know, say something positive. Just don't throw a dollar on them and keep on walking because that's not going to help the problem, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's better to just, you know, sit there and talk to them, know their story, you know. Not every person, you know, not every person homeless is a thug or, you know, or somebody despicable. You know, there's regular people like us that have a misfortune.
I wonder, I'll ask Nick and Chuck in a second how they think about the interactions that happen on a daily basis. But I will say that, Enrique, what I have felt like in recent years is too often, even in those moments where I thought, well, I have a dollar or something,
right.
I now feel like the least I can give you is a hug or something,
right.
Like a handshake or just a conversation.
We got a lot of great people out there who's homeless. You know, we got a lot of good good people out there, man. You know, they're not all bad people. There's a lot of good people out there who needs this kind of help, who need help from people like Chuck and Nick. You know, there's a lot of good people out there.
We're going to come back to Enrique's story in a second. Just real briefly, Nick and Chuck, let me just ask you, you know, you guys more than most, you know, you work with the homeless population. And so, but for the average person who's listening right now and wants to do really good things, what's the approach? You're driving, you're walking, you meet someone who is homeless, or at least appears to be homeless, or is presenting themselves as homeless. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there is an easy, I don't want to sterilize this into a set list. I mean, like, that's why I said the main thing is if you're going to interact with somebody, just have a conversation. Make sure you remember that Enrique's advice is they're people. They've got great stories. They've mm-hmm. got great backgrounds, and actually ask them about their day and how they're doing. That is a wonderful piece of advice that I will try not to forget. Well, how else do you approach those interactions, Nick?
Yeah, there's a few different ways. Because I run the organization, I can kind of just stand there and say, hey, do you want to get into housing? So that's an easy way for me.
I don't run an organization like that.
Yeah, you can't do that.
And most of the people listening, no, I hear you.
You know, it's exciting to say that to somebody. Hey, have you thought about getting into housing? And have the conversation that comes after that. When you can start to have that conversation, you get to know their story. You get to know where they're coming from. Maybe they do need a few bucks that day, but ongoing, I think they need to know that they're human beings and that they have dignity and that we care about them in our community. And one of the ways that people have helped our program and helped people like Enrique to exercise that ability is they'll go to our Facebook page and they'll message us and they'll say, hey, here's a picture. I saw this guy. He's on this corner. Can you go out and find him? We track that stuff. We take all that in. We have our outreach team go out. We start to engage them with, you know, just regular things like bus passes and food and water and you know, maybe a hotel stay once in a while with a couple groups and begin that conversation. So if you see somebody and you're concerned about them in your neighborhood, feel free to reach out to us on Facebook and let us know where they are, and we can work with them.
Person-Centered Housing, Inc.?
Yeah, it's PCHO, Inc., facebook.com/PCHO, Inc. That's
okay.
It.
Okay, and how do you feel about the question that the average listener might have about money? I know it's tough.
It is a tough question. I usually give my business card, but that's different. And so money can go different ways. I've always thought about this. Money can go towards alcohol or drugs or food. So once that money leaves your hand, it's the person's choice. And I think when it leaves your hand, the good hope that you have and the prayer that you probably are making for that person, you would hope that it goes to something that's going to help them to be better mm-hmm. and to better themselves. But regardless, you're giving it a shot. It's a 50-50. And I think it's worth it once in a while to help a fellow person out. And maybe it goes to something bad. But hey, you know what? You gave it a shot. And we all play the lotto once in a while, right?
Okay. Chuck, how do you feel about it?
No, I feel very similar. I mean, ideally, take the person into a coffee shop and give them coffee mm-hmm. and maybe mm-hmm. listen to a story. But just really, I mean, Nick and Enrique already said this, but really just accept them or not accept them, but see them as a person. I mean, it's, you know, there's such a stigma attached that that people have and you know, they're not, you know, people that are going to hurt you. You know, they are people just like Enrique said. I mean, engage in a conversation. You know, to me, that's, you know, that's very valuable, and maybe give them your number, and you could maybe go out and give them a hug, Evan.
I am a chronic hugger.
Yeah, you are. It's a good thing.
I truly am. I mean, I know it sounds kind of trite, but,
no, but it's where it's at.
Maybe Enrique can characterize some more of this, but the last thing I would want anyone who happens to be homeless, and I tell my son this all the time, we are no better than them. We don't understand what happened in their lives.
Right.
But Enrique said, don't just throw a dollar at someone who's homeless. the last thing I'd want is for them to think like that they're a problem that I'm hoping just goes away, instead of saying, you're a fellow human being, and I'm willing to grab onto you and give, you know, I'm not afraid of physical contact, in a loving way. I want you to feel that. So, okay, so let's go back to your story then, because you went through those interactions. You felt that distance from people. You felt like many people didn't see you. Did you have good interactions besides with Nick? I know Nick. You know, Nick was always there.
There's always good people out there.
That's good.
There's always great people out there who's trying to help the homeless. You know, and it's like I said. There's good people, and there's people who just mumble something to you. You know, and there's people who give you dirty looks, and there's people who, you know, let you know. You know. That you know good, you know, and there's all kind of people, but there's more great people out there than there is bad people towards the homeless, you know.
Did you find that anybody feared you?
Yes.
How does it feel to be feared?
I don't know. It's not a good feeling, you know. Have somebody go by you and, you know, grab their kid, put them to the side because they think that you might do something, you know. That's not fair, you know. It's not fair at all having those type of situations, you know. It's just not good at all.
So Enrique, you eventually were able to kind of change that cycle for yourself. So let's talk about the good news here. You were able to make that decision that you felt like you were tired of feeling tired.
Yes.
And what did you do next? What happened?
Nick helped me get into housing. From there, he helped me get, he put me into a drug program, gave me all kinds of help that I needed. They connected me to the VA. They done so much for me, you know. I feel so much better now.
When did that happen? When did that process start for you?
It started about almost 2 years ago.
Right around when we started the organization.
That's great. And when it comes to housing, you know, did you feel comfortable? It was a change for you after years of being homeless.
It was a completely change because you know, the first few months I had my mattress on the floor because I was so used to sleep on the floor.
Wow.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
You finally get housing and you still decide you're going to sleep on the floor just because that's where you're used to.
Yes, it was something I could, and I'd tell myself, I'd look at myself and be like, why am I doing this? But it was the way I did it for so long that was my most comfortable way to do it.
On cold nights when you were inside, did you think about that? Did you think about the difference between the way you had lived for about 4 years?
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely. I brought some of my old friends that were still homeless on a cold night, you know, have them sleep, you know, sleep over, you know.
Absolutely.
And they, from all the people I was homeless with, to this day, I could say that there's probably just one left that's out there that don't want to get help. These two gentlemen here have pretty much helped every single person.
That's okay.
Who's there with me.
I love that Enrique's phone is blowing up in this conversation. Sorry. There's another way your life has changed.
Yeah, I got a phone before I got a phone.
He's got a phone.
It's awesome. No, Nick and Chuck, we're going to talk to them before the hour's out now on how it's growing and how many people they're helping. But Enrique's story is an awesome one because it's not just you, you said. It's the people that you used to essentially live outside.
Yeah, people who I used to be around. Every single one of them, these two gentlemen has helped them out, and you go and they all doing great. You know, some of them they're back into society, they working, they doing great things, you know, and all I could say is thank you, because without these two gentlemen, I'd probably be out there still.
So Enrique, what I don't want listeners to think is that this is easy or magic, or
it's not.
I know it's tough,
not at all.
And we're going to talk about the work to maintain that. Before we go to our only break of the hour, Nick and Chuck, what you need, you know, to help people with, you know, you go out there. It's awesome. Enrique is just blowing up. It's so
sorry.
Great. You know, you're out there, Nick. You, like you said, you might have something, you know, like different vouchers or different cards or sometimes a little money or whatever it is that people may need in the short term. Mm-hmm. And then you and Chuck, when you're doing person-centered housing options, Inc., this stuff does not grow on trees. So you've got a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And I'm only going to ask because it's that time of year that listeners might think that is the kind of place that I can help.
Yeah.
How do they do that?
Yeah, so they can go to our Facebook page or our website. Either one will take them to the fundraiser that I'm hosting on our Facebook page. Right now, we're trying to raise money for household items, whether it's an alarm. I don't know. You've been using your alarm. So I think for somebody to have an alarm is pretty an amazing thing, to have bed sheets, to have window treatments, to have a coffee maker in the morning is a thing that we take for granted in our community. These are nice things to have, but they're also things that make a home. And so what we really want is for every dollar that somebody donates goes right back into providing household items, providing services, and providing the stability that someone needs to feel like this is not just a temporary solution. This is their permanent home. This is where they're going to live for as long as they want to live. And that's our goal. That's our mission.
Nick Coulter, Chuck Albanese are the co-founders of Person-Centered Housing Incorporated, Person-Centered Housing Options Incorporated, PCHO, Inc. And you can find them, Person-Centered Housing Options Incorporated. You'll find them on Facebook. You find them online. And if you want to help them out, now you know how to do it. Enrique Arcelay is someone who they have helped. He's telling his story. And we're so glad that it's a success story. Someone who was chronically homeless, but he's here telling this story. So let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll come back to Enrique's story and find out how he's doing now and how PCHO is trying to grow. That's all coming up next. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, a child's story of being a victim of bullying went viral after his mom posted a video of him in tears on the internet. Now, there have been some twists in the story, but we will take a look at bullying and all that goes with it in our first hour. In our second hour, Rochester's favorite books, 2017. We'll ask you for yours as well, some last-minute holiday ideas. Books and more. Talk to you Monday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So Enrique Arcelay is doing pretty well. And like I said, it is not magic. It doesn't happen without work. Mm-hmm. And so in a moment, you're going to hear an extraordinary story about Enrique, his kids. But before we get there, it's called a tease in the business. Before we get there, I do want to ask you, what was the hardest thing early on, going back a couple of years ago? You know, you end up in housing and you know, I don't know what your goals were at the time. If it involved drugs, I assume it involved drugs because you talked about drugs. But also, I don't know if it involved work. Tell me about what your goals were and how you went about that.
First, I needed help for myself. I needed to get out of the drug addiction and needed to get out of the anxiety and the depression I was on. And by me getting all this help, it worked for me in the long run. You know, finally, it took a while. You know, I'm not gonna say like this day it's not magic. In order for you to get help, you need to want the help. Mm-hmm. You know, and I wanted it bad. I wanted the help bad, and I worked hard. You know, I tried my hardest to get off drugs and work and go to all these different places you gotta go in order to get better, and I finally think clear. You know, I have a clear mind now. It's not like before. I'll see myself walking around downtown and I catch myself talking to myself a lot. Like, you see a lot of homeless people do that. Once I got all this help, it helped me greatly. I felt better. I looked better. It It was. I can't even explain how much, you know, joy it brings me to just be here, sitting down right now, with a clear mind. You know, it's hard. You know, it was hard back then. It's so easy now.
Are you clean now?
Yes, I go to recovery groups. Mm-hmm. You know, I go to Catholic Family Center, and they help me, you know, maintain sobriety.
And so, how long did it take you to feel like you could actually say, I mean, recovery is an ongoing process,
right.
But how long did it take you after moving into housing mm-hmm. to feel like I'm clean?
You need to adapt. It took me a few months, you know. It took me a little bit, but once they set you up, they just don't throw you into an apartment and be like, here you go. You know, they also get you the help you need. And by getting that help, it got me to a point where I could say, I'm good. You know, it took this long, but it was for a great cause.
You know? And then what is the goal after you work on getting clean? You're going to stay in recovery. What else?
My goals is, you know, move on, get a job later on, you know, be able to work, be able to get back to the workforce and you know, help society.
And you think you're on your way to doing that?
I'm right on my way to do that. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Nick, how often are you sort of in touch with a guy like Enrique who you knew living on the streets before he decided to take that help and move into the housing?
Pretty frequently. A lot of the gentlemen and individuals, families, and women that we serve have connected with me or connected with our staff, and our staff are excellent. They have a loving, caring approach to providing services. And so every now and then, you know, somebody that we've housed in the past or that I've worked with before person-centered housing options connects with us and says, hey, you changed our lives, changed my life. And mm-hmm. and what I'd like to do is get them back involved with PCHO. They're giving back to their community. We have volunteers that are participants with the program and are permanently housed with the program, but are also volunteering and providing meals or going to people's houses and helping them adjust to this new thing called an apartment. Enrique's right. This is not an easy thing to do. It takes months and months of adjustment. People sleep on the floors for a while. Some people, even when they have beds, mm-hmm. People will pitch tents in their apartments and sleep in the tent because it's more comfortable than being in their apartment.
It's what they're used to.
Yeah. I had a guy that was sleeping on the concrete in his apartment with cardboard on top of the concrete like he was outside. And I said, you know, you don't have to do that anymore. I know, but I can't stop. And it took him almost 2 years to get into a bed. And so it takes time. It takes that compassion and that patience. And it takes people's attitudes like Enrique's that want to give back. They want to change their lives. They want to get back with their families and spend holidays like we have coming up with the people that they love that they've lost, you know.
Well, speaking of, how many kids do you have?
I have two.
What's going on?
Last Christmas I spent with my kids was when they were 3 and 1, and they're 21 and 18 right now. And I'm going to go see them on Tuesday. I'm going down to Florida, go spend time with them a couple of weeks. And I'm just really stoked about
you
it.
You haven't seen them in 17 years or so?
Yeah.
And you're going to go see them next week?
Yes, sir.
How do you feel about that?
I'm excited, man. I'm excited, nervous. It's a lot going on in my head right now, but I'm mostly happy, man.
How did you get back in touch with them? I mean, you were homeless for about 4 years.
I always been in touch with them.
Okay.
You know, I always been in touch with them. Just been, you know, I'm fortunate not to be around them because of certain situations. But I always been in touch with them. It was just never had the guts to go down there, you know.
And so the difference now is you're more stable. You've got a stable living situation.
Yes.
Are you more proud?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm proud of myself, man. I smile in the mirror every morning when I wake up. I smile because I've gone a long way. And there's a lot of people who's been in this program who I know they smile every morning, too. And I'm excited, man.
So you've been in touch, but you haven't seen them.
Right.
Last Christmas, you saw them was 3-1.
Right.
So what do you expect this time? How are they doing?
Oh, they excited too, man. They, you know, they text me every on my phone that was ringing earlier. They text me all the time. They excited to see me. They want to see me. They want to spend time with me. You know, they're my kids, man. I love them with my heart.
I just met you. I want to spend time with you.
Right.
Imagine your kids.
He's a great guy.
He's awesome.
He's a good cook too. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you cook?
I cook anything, man. Anything.
Yeah.
This is an amazing conversation. So Chuck, can I ask you? I want to ask you and Nick about the goals of growth here and what you have coming up. But can I also just ask you? You know, sitting here and hearing Enrique's story. I know you knew Enrique's story before today, obviously, but. Does this make you look back and these are the stories that make you say, well, Nick and I jumped into this two and a half years ago and it was the right thing to do?
Definitely. I mean, the first year or so was very painful, but we won't go into those details. but no, this is exactly why we did what we, you know, set out to do. And it just, you know, I can't say enough about Enrique and him his willingness to come and share his story, because not every person that we work with would be willing to do that. So thank you, Enrique.
No problem.
Yeah, beautiful stuff. I'm going to take a phone call in a second, but let me just ask Chuck and Nick to kind of close one loop for us. How many people are you serving now, and what are the long-term goals for Person-Centered Housing Options, Inc.?
So I think we're about on target for 2018 to serve around 500 households. That includes care management. That includes outreach to folks that are still on the streets. That includes the permanent supportive housing programs that we work with Providence on. That includes our rapid rehousing programs. So we started off serving about 30 people, and that was in 2015.
But that was just Nick and I, though.
That was just the two of us with a couple interns who are – one of which is now hired and with us. And now we have about 13 staff, I believe, including ourselves, and some excellent programs. And we're working with the local continuum of care and HUD to maintain those programs, and hoping that we use every single dollar that we get from the federal government to go right back into the community.
Got a lot of questions via email and phone, so let's go ahead and take some of those. And I see it ringing now. This is Val calling from Honeyway Falls. Go ahead, Val. Hi, Val.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Val. Are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Val. Can you hear me? I'm not sure what's going on there, but we lost Val. So let's go. Let me take a few emails here. Robert writes to us and says, while I lived in San Francisco, very different than Rochester, I know. He says, a story had come out that the biggest barrier to getting a job and becoming successful was not having a cell phone. Could you discuss that a little? Is that an issue?
That's a huge issue. And we've tried to write that into some of our grants as a staple, that we would provide cell phones while people are out on the streets. It's a very tasking thing to do, and it's not easy to write into a grant, to be honest. But one of the major barriers for a lot of our individuals that we serve is that they can't access the internet. They can't apply for jobs, which are now a lot more automated, and they can't follow up on resumes that they've put in because they obviously don't have a way to call. And less places are willing to let you borrow a cell phone or let you call out from locations. And so I think it's a big issue.
Okay. Thank you, Robert. Let me grab Ann in Penfield. Go ahead, Ann.
Hi, Evan. Great program here.
Thanks.
And I have a question for Nick and Chuck. Give me a little bit of a feedback, but hopefully you can hear me okay. I'm wondering, in the programs that you've established, if there's been an opportunity to figure out and do some assessments about nutritional needs. I'm sure a lot of folks that are on the street have problems with malabsorption, vitamin D deficiency. It's probably a real problem, especially in winter. people. All of those things can take a while to work out. And I wondered if you have any partnerships with local health care providers, or if that might be in the work. Programs.
Yeah, and
congratulations on doing it.
I know they appreciate that. Thanks. I'm just going to jump in. The call was flickering a little, but it was on nutrition and health. And Chuck Albanese, that's kind of right up your alley, I think. Go ahead.
Yes. We don't have a nutritionist on staff, but we do have a health home care staff that to follow up on the health care needs of the individuals that are enrolled in the program. So we definitely recognize the importance of that. And most of the individuals that we work with, their diet has been very poor, and any pre-existing conditions obviously going to be compounded by that. So it's imperative that we discuss that and do anything we can to work with them.
Okay. All right, let me grab Val is back on line one. Go ahead, Val.
Yes. Whoops. I just wanted to say that first, this is one of the reasons that I always tune into this show. This is really inspiring.
Thank you, Bill. A little bit ago,
I had the thought that I would be one of the WXXI donors that would love it if my premium was not some CDs or a book or something like that, but home items that would be donated to people that are a part of this program.
What a good idea.
I suspect I wouldn't be the only one that would think that. So maybe the... two or three times a year fundraising campaigns could include something like the opportunity to donate to people like Enrique.
That's all
I wanted to say. Thank you.
Val, thank you, sir.
Val, thank you. That is a great idea. I will tell you off the top of my head, and I could be getting myself in trouble, I love the idea. There are a number of organizations that help work on the issue of homelessness in our community. Person-Centered Housing Options, Inc. is just one of them. And I'm not sure we're in a position to sort of pick and choose, but maybe what we could do is sort of make a menu and just tell you that we'll match a contribution up to X and let you choose. That's a neat idea. I guess the answer is valid. I don't know, and I'm not the expert here, but the sentiment is so good, and I'm glad to hear that these are the kind of programs that inspire you. If they inspire you to give and you want to do that, this is a good chance to ask Nick and Chuck one more time. Person-Centered Housing Options, Inc. is just over 2 years old. It helps people like Enrique Arcelet, who's with us today, and how can they help out if they want to?
Yeah, let's go to pcho.org or facebook.com/pchoinc. And just for listeners just like Val, we are going to be posting a Amazon wish list for household startup kits. I was late last night creating that. We'll be posting it today. If you want to order items and send them to our office for our households that are moving into new apartments, there's blankets and pillows and silverware and coffee makers and all sorts of things on this list. And you can go there, purchase them, and send them right to our location, and we will deliver them to people's houses. And please do message us if you have any other ideas. We love new ideas that are innovative.
All right, a couple more quick emails. Angela writes to the program and says, I've heard that sanctions from public assistance really contributes to homelessness. Do you see that often?
Sure do.
Yes.
Yeah, we sure do, and we've alleviated that with our programs. Our one permanent supportive housing program provides the full rent and pays the full rent to landlords for our tenants. The tenant then pays us. That gives the tenant some leniency when there is a public assistance sanction, that if they don't pay, we're still paid by the federal government to pay for that rent, and they can't go back to homelessness. So we're covering that within PCHO, and we're happy to say that that's something that we took into consideration when we started this.
There are organizations that feel differently, that feel like there should be something a little bit more punitive if certain benchmarks aren't met, because otherwise you're enabling. What do you say to that?
Well, we do hold them accountable for those actions, and we do work with them. There's nothing stopping somebody from changing their lives, but we don't have to go back to homelessness to do it. And so there are other ways to take that approach that, you know, might lessen their abilities, or they might be restricted to do certain things. And we work with people like Enrique to navigate that, to find ways that are going to inspire him, not inspire us. We need to get what he wants to do to change his life.
All right, so against my better judgment, I'm going to take Reverend Peter Peters for 30 seconds. That's all you got, well, Reverend. Peter. Do it quick. Never. It's impossible. Go ahead.
Congratulate Nick and Chuck.
Thank you.
Remind them that they helped REACH take a housing first philosophy in everything it does.
You are part of why we are still alive, yes. Peter. I tell you that all the time. Thank you so much.
Reverend, thank you. That was the shortest he could have possibly been.
Yeah,
I looked at Chuck, and Chuck and I were like, oh, Reverend Peters is such a good guy, but I don't know if he can do 30 seconds. No, we say that out of love, Reverend Peters, and I know he knows that. There's a voice that you heard on this program the last time we talked about housing as a human right, that kind of a conversation. So thanks for the phone call, Reverend Peters. And I'm going to give Enrique the last word here. What are your final thoughts for our listeners as we think about homelessness in our community this holiday season?
Get out there, help them out, you know, say hi, talk to them, you know, have a Merry Christmas like everybody else is going to have, you know, just be good and kind, you know.
Great advice for all of us, for all of us. Enrique, good luck
Thank
to you.
You.
Have fun seeing your kids
Thank
next
you.
Week.
Thank you. Have Thank you, Chuck. Thank you, Nick.
And I'm so sorry you have to go to Florida next week. What a wonderful success story. That's Enrique Arcelé. Nick Coulter.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate
You're
the
welcome.
Time.
My pleasure.
And
Thank
Chuck
you.
Albanese. Thank you, Chuck. Great seeing you here. And congratulations on 2+ years of Person-Centered Housing Options, Inc. in Rochester. Inspiring way to end the week. I'm with Val. These are wonderful stories, and they're right here in our community. So let's get out there, spread a little more love, have a great weekend. John Andrus, the engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we are back with you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.